A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about the reflective stripes on safety vests and the chevrons on the back of ambulances, and he's asking whether those reflective colors are standardized, how the materials are actually made, and what kind of testing proves they'll work when someone's life depends on them. There's a surprisingly deep rabbit hole here.
There really is. And here's the thing that grabbed me right away. The reflective stripe on a highway worker's vest and the chevron pattern on an ambulance are doing fundamentally the same job, making a human being visible to a driver at night, but they're governed by completely different rulebooks. One of them gets tested to survive a direct hit from a fire hose. The other just needs to look bright under a fluorescent bulb in a store aisle.
That's the gap between industrial safety and consumer retail in one sentence.
That gap is where people get hurt. So let's start by clearing up the biggest misconception, because it's the one that even people who wear this gear every day get wrong. High visibility and reflective are not the same thing. They're two completely different technologies that happen to live on the same garment.
Right. The fluorescent yellow-green that screams construction site works during the day by grabbing ultraviolet light and converting it into visible light that your eyes can't ignore. But at night, under headlights, that fluorescent fabric is basically invisible. It's the silver-gray retroreflective stripes that do the actual work after dark.
And here's the physics of why. Fluorescent materials contain optical brighteners, chemical compounds like stilbene derivatives and coumarins that absorb UV radiation in the 300 to 400 nanometer range and re-emit it as visible light in the blue-green or yellow-green part of the spectrum. They're effectively converting energy your eyes can't see in the energy. They can, which is why fluorescent colors look almost unnaturally bright in daylight. They're emitting more visible light than actually hits them.
They're cheating.
They're absolutely cheating. It's a photon shell game. And the reason fluorescent yellow-green and fluorescent orange-red dominate safety wear isn't arbitrary. Those colors sit right at the peak sensitivity of human photopic vision, which is 555 nanometers. Your eyes are literally wired to detect those wavelengths most efficiently. Fluorescent orange-red also has the advantage of contrasting against pretty much every natural background. Blue sky, green foliage, gray concrete. There's almost nothing in nature that's that exact shade of screaming orange.
Which is why hunting vests are that color too. The deer don't see it the way we do, but other hunters definitely do.
Now, retroreflective materials work on a completely different principle. Instead of converting UV to visible light, they take whatever light hits them and bounce it straight back toward the source. And the key word there is straight back. A white t-shirt reflects light in all directions. That's diffuse reflection. Retroreflection means the light returns within a very narrow cone, typically an observation angle of full 0.2 to 2. That's what makes the material appear to glow when you're behind the headlights.
Because the light from your own car is bouncing right back into your own eyes.
And there are two fundamentally different ways to achieve that. The older technology uses glass beads, tiny spherical lenses, maybe 40 to 80 microns in diameter, embedded in a polymer layer with a reflective coating behind them. Light enters the bead, gets refracted by the spherical surface, focuses onto the reflective backing, and then gets sent back out along roughly the same path it came in. Think of it like a tiny marble with a mirror glued to the back.
The newer tech.
Instead of spheres, you have an array of microscopic corner cube reflectors, tiny three-sided pyramids molded into a polymer film. A corner cube has this elegant geometric property where any light ray that enters the cube bounces off all three internal faces and exits parallel to its original path, regardless of the entry angle within a certain range. It's the same principle as those retroreflectors left on the moon by Apollo astronauts. Three mirrors at right angles to each other.
Glass beads are analog retroreflection, and microprisms are digital.
Actually, a really good way to put it. Glass beads are less precise, but more forgiving of angle. Microprisms are engineered for specific angular performance, and they're dramatically brighter when you're within that sweet spot. To give you concrete numbers, take 3M Scotchlite 8910 Silver Fabric, which is a glass bead product. It has a coefficient of retroreflection, what the standards call RA, of around 330 to 400 candelas per lux per square meter at the standard test conditions. That's the minimum for ANSI Class 3 certification. Now compare that to 3M's Diamond Grade DG 9830 microprismatic material. That hits about 800 candelas per lux per square meter at the same 0.2 degree observation angle.
More than double.
More than double. And at longer distances, where the observation angle between the headlight and the driver's eyes gets even tighter, that gap widens. Microprismatic materials can be 2 to 3 times brighter at 500 feet. But, and this is the trade-off, they're more sensitive to entrance angle. Tilt a glass bead vest sideways and it still reflects reasonably well. Tilt a microprismatic vest the same way and the performance drops off faster because those corner cubes are optimized for light coming from roughly head-on.
The bead vest is more forgiving if you're bent over or turned sideways, but the prismatic vest screams louder when you're squared up to the traffic.
That's exactly the engineering trade-off, and it's why you'll see both technologies still in use. Glass beads are cheaper and more flexible. They can go on fabric that drapes and moves with the body. Microprisms tend to be on stiffer films, so they're often used as segmented tape rather than full fabric panels. But the brightness difference is so dramatic that for high-risk applications, emergency responders working highway incidents at night, microprismatic is increasingly the standard.
Let's talk about those standards. Who decides what counts as bright enough?
In the United States, the governing document is ANSI/ISEA 27. ISEA is the International Safety Equipment Association. The standard defines everything: the minimum area of background material, the minimum area of retroreflective material, the chromaticity coordinates for the fluorescent colors, the photometric performance requirements, and the testing protocols to verify all of it.
There are 3 classes.
3 performance classes, and they're not just marketing tiers. They specify actual square inches of material. Class 1 is the lowest coverage intended for workers who are separated from traffic and whose attention isn't diverted from the hazard. Parking attendants, warehouse workers, sidewalk maintenance. Minimum 217 square inches of background material and 155 square inches of retroreflective material. Class 2 is for workers near roadways where traffic exceeds 25 miles per hour. Road construction, railway workers, airport ground crews. You need at least 775 square inches of background and 201 square inches of retroreflective. Class 3 is the highest. Workers facing the most serious hazards, emergency responders, anyone working on highways where traffic is moving above 50 miles per hour. Minimum 1240 square inches of background and 310 square inches of retroreflective.
A Class 3 vest has basically doubled the reflective material of a Class 1.
More than 5 times the background fluorescent area. But here's where it gets interesting. The standard doesn't just say be bright. It defines the exact chromaticity coordinates that a color must fall within to be labeled fluorescent yellow-green or fluorescent orange-red. These are defined in CIE 1931 Color Space, which is the international standard for quantifying human color perception. For fluorescent yellow-green, the chromaticity coordinates have to fall within a polygon bounded by 4 specific XY coordinate pairs. For example, one vertex is at X equals 0.387, Y equals 0, another at 0, another at 0, and the last at 0.
You can't just eyeball it and say, that looks yellow-green to me.
You absolutely cannot. The standard specifies a spectrophotometric measurement with specific illuminant and observer conditions. And there are only 3 approved fluorescent colors in ANSI 107, fluorescent yellow-green, fluorescent orange, red, and fluorescent red. That's it. No fluorescent blue, no fluorescent pink, no fluorescent purple. Those might exist in running gear at your local sporting goods store, but they're not part of the industrial safety standard.
Which explains why every construction vest you've ever seen is either nuclear yellow or blaze orange.
And those colors are chosen because they exploit the peak sensitivity of human vision under both daylight and low light conditions. The 505 nanometer peak I mentioned earlier, that's right in the yellow-green zone. Fluorescent orange-red sits a bit off that peak, but has superior contrast against most backgrounds.
That's the physics and the color science. But how do you actually test whether a vest meets the standard? What does a testing lab do?
This is where it gets wonderfully rigorous. The core measurement is done on a goniometer, a device that positions a light source and a photodetector at precise angles relative to the material sample. You need a completely dark room, controlled temperature and humidity, and a calibrated light source that matches CIE standard Illuminant A, which simulates a tungsten automotive headlamp. The detector measures how much light comes back from the sample at specific observation angles, 0.2 degrees, 0.0 degrees, 1 TO degrees, and 2, and you rotate the sample through entrance angles from 5 degrees up to 60 degrees.
Why those specific observation angles?
Because they correspond to real-world driving scenarios. 2 degrees, you're simulating a driver in a passenger car about 800 feet from the reflective material. The headlight and the driver's eyes are very close together relative to the distance. 0 degrees, you're simulating a truck driver much closer to the target, where the vertical separation between the headlight and the driver's eyes creates a wider angle. The standard has to account for all of these scenarios.
A vest that's bright at 800 feet might be dim at 200 feet from a truck cab.
And the standard requires passing RA values at every specified angle combination. You can't be good at one distance and terrible at another. For Class 3 retroreflective material, you need at least 330 candelas per lux per square meter at the U.2 degree observation angle and 5 degree entrance angle. And that's just the photometric test.
There's more.
Oh, there's so much more. The wash testing alone is brutal. ANSI 1-7 requires 25 wash cycles at 60 degrees Celsius using AATCC 1993 standard reference detergent, followed by tumble drying. After those 25 cycles, the material still has to meet the minimum RA requirements, and washing is the number one killer of reflective performance. Mechanical abrasion from the wash drum degrades the reflective layer. Detergents chemically attack the polymer films, and if you use fabric softener, the surfactants coat the glass beads or prism surfaces and can reduce retroreflection by up to 50% after a single wash. There was a 2019 study from the University of Alberta's Department of Human Ecology that demonstrated exactly this. Fabric softener leaves a film on the reflective elements that scatters light instead of returning it, and most people don't know this. They toss their Hy-Vis gear in with the regular laundry, add a cap full of fabric softener, and unknowingly destroy the thing that's supposed to keep them alive.
Like adopting a feral cat. Seems fine until it isn't.
That's just washing. The environmental testing is even more punishing. UV exposure under a xenon arc lamp for a minimum of 100 hours to simulate years of sunlight. Temperature cycling from minus 30 Celsius to plus 70 Celsius. Flex testing, 10,000 cycles on a flexometer to simulate the repeated bending the material undergoes when you move. Abrasion testing, using a Tabor abraser with CS10 wheels for 500 cycles. These materials have to survive all of that and still reflect light.
The testing lab is basically torturing a vest until it confesses its weaknesses.
That's the job. And accredited labs like UL, SGS, and Intertech do this work. They issue certificates that say a specific product from a specific manufacturer meets the standard. And here's the uncomfortable truth. A label that says ANSI Class 3 on a vest you bought online means only that the manufacturer claims compliance. Unless there's a third-party certification mark from one of those labs, nobody has independently verified it.
That brings us to counterfeit gear,
which is a massive and underappreciated problem. In 2023, there was an EU-wide operation called Reflect Safe that seized 47,000 square meters of counterfeit reflective material across 12 member states. That's enough material to make roughly 150,000 vests. The material was destined for workwear manufacturers who either didn't know it was fake or didn't care.
47,000 square meters. That's almost 5 hectares of fake safety tape.
In 2022, NIOSH, the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, did a study where they bought 30 vests labeled ANSI Class 3 from online retailers. After just 5 wash cycles, 11 of them, more than a third, failed to meet minimum retroreflection requirements. These weren't obviously cheap products. They were marketed as compliant safety gear, sold on major platforms, and they failed catastrophically.
A worker could be wearing a vest that passed a visual inspection on day one, and by the end of the first week of washing, they're functionally invisible at night.
They'd have no way of knowing. The vest still looks silver gray. The fluorescent fabric might still look bright under store lighting. The only way to know is a photometric test, which nobody carries in their pocket. although there is a rough field test. If you're in a dark room and you shine a phone flashlight at the reflective material from about 30 feet away, it should appear to glow brightly. If it doesn't, or if you can see uneven patches, the material is degraded.
That's useful. I'm going to try that on the vest hanging in the hall closet.
And while we're on practical advice, wash reflective gear inside out, use liquid detergent instead of powder because powder abrasives physically damage the beads, and never ever use fabric softener. Also, replace the gear if the reflective material shows cracking, peeling, or if the fluorescent color has visibly faded. Fluorescent dyes degrade with UV exposure. That screaming yellow-green turns into a sad beige after enough hours in the sun, and at that point it's no longer doing its daytime job either.
Let's pivot to something you mentioned earlier, ambulances. The chevrons on the back of an ambulance are doing the same basic job as the stripes on a vest, but the standards are different.
Radically different, and they vary by country. In the United States, emergency vehicle markings fall under NFPA 1901 for fire apparatus and various state-level regulations for ambulances. The chevron pattern, alternating red and yellow retroreflective stripes at 45-degree angles on the rear, is designed for maximum conspicuity when the vehicle is parked at an incident scene. In Europe, the governing standard is ECE 104, which specifies retroreflective markings for vehicles, and the performance requirements are significantly higher than for wearable gear. ECE 1004 requires a minimum coefficient of retroreflection of 500 candelas per lux per square meter for red material and 700 for yellow, both measured at a 0.33 degree observation angle. Compare that to the 33 minimum for Class 3 wearable material. The vehicle markings need to be detectable at much greater distances because highway speeds mean a driver needs more time to react.
Right. If you see a worker in a vest at 500 feet when you're doing 70 miles per hour, you have about 5 seconds to react. If you see an ambulance at the same distance, same speed, you need to process that it's an emergency vehicle and start slowing down. Every fraction of a second of earlier detection matters.
The chevron pattern itself is cleverly designed. The alternating stripes at 45 degrees create a visual signal that's unnatural. Nothing in the natural world looks like that, so it grabs attention. The human visual system is wired to notice pattern disruptions, and a backward-facing chevron on a vehicle that's normally seen moving forward is a disruption. In the UK, they use the Battenberg pattern, a checkerboard of blue and yellow retroreflective squares, which is specified in the ONHS ambulance technical specification. It's a different visual language, but the principle is the same. Make the vehicle impossible to miss.
The materials used on vehicles are different, too.
Much more robust. Vehicle markings are typically microprismatic sheeting applied with pressure-sensitive adhesive, and they have to survive pressure washing, road salt, diesel exhaust, temperature extremes from desert heat to Arctic cold, and years of UV exposure without delaminating or fading. The testing includes things like fuel resistance, literally soaking the material in diesel and gasoline to make sure it doesn't dissolve. You don't do that to a construction vest.
No, but you might do the fire hose test you mentioned at the top.
Right. Some standards for emergency responder gear require water penetration resistance testing that essentially simulates being blasted with a fire hose. It's a completely different tier of durability.
What about the manufacturing side? How do you actually make a microprismatic reflective film?
It's a precision manufacturing process that's closer to semiconductor fabrication than to textile production. You start with a master mold, a metal plate engraved with the negative of the corner cube pattern. The corner cubes are typically around 0.15 to 2.5 millimeters across, and they have to be geometrically perfect. Any deviation from the 90-degree angles between the faces and the retroreflection efficiency drops. The master mold is created using diamond turning or photolithography.
Diamond turning? As in an actual diamond cutting tool?
An actual diamond cutting tool on an ultra-precision lathe, capable of positioning accuracy measured in nanometers. From the master, you create a nickel electroform, essentially a metal copy, and that becomes the production tool. Then you emboss the corner cube pattern into a thermoplastic film, typically acrylic or polycarbonate, under heat and pressure. The backside of the film gets a vacuum-deposited aluminum coating to create the reflective surface. Then the whole thing is laminated to a backing fabric or an adhesive layer depending on the application.
The fabric is actually a multi-layer engineered film.
It's a composite structure that's more like an optical device than a textile. and the quality control is intense. 3M and Orifol, the two biggest manufacturers, test every production run for photometric performance. They have to, because a tiny variation in the embossing temperature or the aluminum deposition thickness can shift the RA values outside the specification.
Which brings us to the question of how you know if what you're buying is real. You mentioned the NIOSH study. A third of the vests failed. What are the red flags?
First, look for the specific standard number printed on the label. Not just high visibility or ANSI approved, but the full designation, ANSI/ISE17-2025 or EN2041 for European gear or AS/NZS462 for Australian. The label should include the class number and a manufacturer identifier. Second, look for a third-party certification mark, UL, SGS, Intertech, or a notified body number for European products. If the label just says meets ANSI standards without any certifier logo, be skeptical. A genuine ANSI Class 3 vest from a reputable manufacturer typically costs $25 to $60. If you're seeing one for $12 on an online marketplace, the economics don't work. The certified materials alone cost more than that before you even cut and sew the garment.
The $12 vest is almost certainly fake or non-compliant.
Or it might meet the standard on day one, but degrade after three washes because the materials weren't properly tested for durability. Either way, you're gambling with someone's safety.
Let's talk about where this is heading. You mentioned earlier that the standards are in flux. ANSI 17 just updated to the 2025 revision, and the EU is working on a revision to EN2471 expected in 2027.
The 2025 ANSI update tightened some of the photometric requirements and added more specific guidance on garment design, things like the placement of reflective stripes relative to the edges of the garment to ensure 360-degree visibility. The EU revision is more ambitious. There's discussion of incorporating requirements for smart reflective materials, materials that can change their properties based on ambient light conditions. Imagine a vest that's passive during the day but actively illuminates at night, or a chevron pattern that adjusts its brightness based on the distance of approaching headlights.
Moving from passive to active safety markings.
That's the paradigm shift. And there's another dimension to this that I find fascinating. As autonomous vehicles become more common, they don't see the world the way human drivers do. A self-driving car might use LiDAR, laser imaging, at 905 nanometers or 1550 nanometers, rather than visible light cameras. Retroreflective materials optimized for human vision might not be particularly reflective at those near-infrared wavelengths. So some manufacturers are already developing what they call LiDAR-optimized reflective films, materials designed to be bright at the specific wavelengths that autonomous vehicle sensors use.
The reflective vest of the future might be invisible to human eyes, but blazingly bright to a self-driving car's LiDAR.
Or ideally, both. A dual-band retroreflector that works in visible light for human drivers and in near-infrared for machine vision systems. That's technically feasible. You'd engineer the corner cube geometry and the reflective coating to perform well across a broader spectrum. It just hasn't been standardized yet.
Which means there's a window right now where a worker in a perfectly compliant ANSI Class 3 vest might be less visible to a self-driving car than to a human driver.
That's the kind of regulatory gap that keeps safety engineers up at night. The standards were written for human vision. The vehicles are changing faster than the standards can adapt. The EU's 2027 revision might address some of this, but it's not clear yet whether LiDAR compatibility will make it into the final document.
To pull this back to the original question, are reflective colors standardized? They're defined by chromaticity coordinates in an international color space. There are only 3 approved fluorescent colors in the US standard, and every batch of material gets tested on a goniometer against specific numerical thresholds. How are they made? Either with glass beads, tiny spherical lenses with reflective backing, or with microprismatic corner cube arrays embossed into polymer film with diamond-turned precision tooling. How are they tested? Washed 25 times at 60 degrees Celsius, blasted with UV for 100 hours, frozen, baked, flexed 10,000 times, abraded, and then measured in a dark room at 4 different observation angles.
Even after all that, a third of the vests sold online fail, which is really the takeaway here. standards are only as good as the enforcement behind them. The gap between certified and actually tested is where counterfeit and degraded products live. If you're buying gear that someone's life depends on, the certification mark from UL or SGS or Intertech is the only thing standing between visibility and invisibility.
Skip the fabric softener.
Absolutely skip the fabric softener, unless you want your reflective vest to have the retro-reflective performance of a cotton t-shirt.
Which is, to be clear, approximately 0 candelas per lux per square meter.
I love that we can put a number on that now.
That's the theme of this whole episode. Everything that seems vague and qualitative, bright, visible, high Vs, turns out to have a number attached to it. Chromaticity coordinates, RA values, observation angles, wash cycles. It's a whole hidden infrastructure of measurement.
It's hidden in plain sight. Every highway worker, every paramedic, every airport ground crew member is wrapped in the product of that measurement infrastructure. The vest that looks like a simple piece of orange fabric with some silver stripes is actually a precision optical device that's been tortured in a lab to prove it works.
Next time you see one, you'll know.
You'll know the 330 candelas per lux per square meter minimum. You'll know the 25 wash cycles. You'll know the diamond turn mold and the xenon arc lamp. And you'll know that the $12 version from the online marketplace probably doesn't have any of that behind it.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
During the high medieval period, a traveler in what is now Niger recorded an unlikely partnership. A species of cuttlefish had learned to mimic the exact texture and color of a specific freshwater clam shell, allowing it to hunt the clam's predators by impersonating their prey. The relationship was so precise that local fishermen believed the two creatures were the same animal at different stages of life.
Right?
Cuttlefish in medieval Niger. I have several questions, none of which I'm going to ask.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It genuinely helps other people find the show. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Stay visible out there.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.